Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings, Ma'at-Hotep. Welcome to another segment of New Day Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and as usual, we are always very happy to be able to come to you live and in living color every week. Every week at this time, we're here to bring you information and inspiration, and of course, those things that are specifically geared to our liberation. As we proceed with this month of so-called May, we want to remind you that a lot is going on all over the world, of course, and certainly as we begin to see various things unfold, we are also able to understand that certain things are really kind of winding down in certain regards. And to some degree, I guess some might say that's a good thing. Well, we're going to talk about that tonight. Of course, some of the things that are going on as current events, one might say, and certainly some of the things that we want to look at for the future. Before we begin to do that, of course, we all give thanks and praises to our Creator, and certainly we are always very appreciative of our freedom-fighting ancestors. Tonight's program is going to be a continuation of some of the dialogue we had last week, including our tribute to El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz, also known as Malcolm X. And we're going to also, of course, talk more about the assassination of Malcolm Atif Shabazz, that, of course, being the grandson of Malcolm X, who was murdered approximately 1 year ago in Mexico. Some very interesting things have developed as a result of that situation, and, we want to make certain that we continue to bring it to your attention. We feel that we would be remiss if we did not do that. We owe it to El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz and the family to not just act like it didn't happen, and certainly not to do whatever we can to find out what, in fact, did happen, since there's still a lot of information that has not been conveyed yet. So as we proceed, we're going to continue to look into that matter as well. And tonight we're going to also talk about African Liberation Day. Again, some more about the history, but perhaps more importantly tonight, we're going to talk about how do we continue, how do we bring forward the ideals, the concepts, the principles, and so forth of African liberation, and specifically Pan-Africanism. We're going to talk about that tonight, and joining us on our live line is going to be Brother David, who is one of the members here in Philly of the AAPRP, and there is going to be an event coming up on Saturday, this Saturday coming, that will focus on the commemoration of African Liberation Day. And so we're going to talk to Brother David about that, and we're going to also talk to him and others, because we're going to open up those lines for you, the live line, as well as our chat room, because, again, we want to begin talking more about what is Pan-Africanism, what is Black nationalism. Of course, when we talk about El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz and Malcolm X, you cannot ever not talk about Black nationalism, for real, for real, if you're doing any real in-depth analysis or study. And so what we want to do is begin to look at how can we actively continue that legacy. Of course, there are a few groups and organizations that are doing that and are doing it quite well, by the way. But we have to also say, can we do more? And the answer, of course, is yes, and we must. So we're going to talk about that, building Black nationalism in the 21st century, as well as Pan-Africanism in the 21st century. What can we do? What must we do? Et cetera, et cetera. We're going to talk more about that. Let's see. What else on our program for tonight? We are going to give you a Marissa Alexander update. And also, we're going to talk a little about, of course, the continual saga going on in Nigeria. We do, of course, want to provide some insight and updates on that as well. And, of course, with that, we want to also ask the question and raise the question, and that is particularly as it pertains to sisters, women here in North America, the question is being raised, why is there so much emphasis placed on what's going on in Nigeria as it has been with what has happened in other countries as well over the years? I even hear sisters talking more about what's going on in Palestine than we do about what's going on with our own sisters, women and girls right here in the U.S. It's a critical analysis that we feel is necessary to bring forward because there's some serious contradictions there. And, you know, again, we would feel remiss if we did not at least to venture into those areas for the dialogue. We feel certain that by doing so, it will not only bring about some enlightenment, but also some interesting facts and some realities as to how we get distracted unnecessarily or to the extent where we're not doing what we need to be doing here. So we want to, you know, again, we're going to have that dialogue. We know that we must respond to things that are happening throughout the African diaspora, and we shall, but we must also make certain that we're taking care of what we need to take care of here. And the question is, are we? Okay, and we're going to answer that question tonight as well, and some of you, of course, will be joining in to help do that. So that's going to be some of what we're going to be talking about tonight for our program. And let's see, I believe it's a few other kind of major topics we're going to tell you about. We're going to also give you some information. There is a pilgrimage that goes to the Malcolm X gravesite each year. And so the UNIA here in Philly is sponsoring the bus, so we're going to give you that information as well. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll probably be talking with Sister Coker, who, of course, is going to be giving us our gifts for tonight. Let's see. Having a little bit of technical difficulty here. Oh, we got it now. Okay, like I said, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to give you our history segment for tonight with Sister Coker. We'll be right back. Okay, unfortunately, we are still having just a few technical difficulties, so bear with us. Okay, I think we got it back now.
Look at the sky and the stars. Look at the beauty and the majesty. Look at the trees and the mountains. Look at the river.
Okay, for some reason we are still having some difficulties with our audio tonight, and of course this is technology, so that could happen. So hopefully we'll be able to work out those little glitches for you as we proceed. At any rate, we're going to go to our live line, and we're going to bring in Sister Coker so that we can at least share that with you tonight. Oh, one other very important thing before we bring in Sister Coker. I want to ask you a question. We have been really focusing on, to some degree, the issues of racism. And so we want to begin to kind of start defining that a bit more as we proceed as well. And so we want to talk a little bit more about racism, what it is. You know, what do we, you know, we know as it is defined what it is. But the question has to be, what is it really? I mean, you know, is it really just about, a group of people or people who don't like somebody because of their race. Is that what racism really is? Well, we want to talk more about that because sometimes we assume that we're all on the same page or similar page about what we say, you know, what we're talking about when we say certain words. So we want to kind of point out to you, you know, what is racism? So that's one of the questions that we're going to be posing tonight in the chat room and also on our live line. But we're going to also ask you if you are familiar with a person who in the 20th century was a very well-known person as a racist who advocated the doctrine of white supremacy, okay? And so I'm going to bring it to your attention because we are going to try to play a couple of clips for you tonight. A very interesting debate that took place in 1966 with this individual and Baba Kwame Ture. We're going to tell you more about that shortly. In the meantime, while we're trying to pull that together for you, because as I said, we're having a little bit of difficulty technically speaking, but hopefully we can get that straightened out for you. But at any rate, what we're going to do is we're going to go to our history segment for tonight and share with you some of the people in our story that we want to recognize for the month of May. And so to do that for us tonight, as we have been doing for the past few weeks, is Sister Coca. Sister Coca, do we have you on this line?
Yes, indeed.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. All right, well, the mic is yours, so go right ahead.
Thank you. Praising our Creator for these 7 years of Black Talk with our Empress. Now, last week, we recognized four indigenous Africans born in the United States who were born May 6th, Willie Mays, Betty Carter, Martin Robinson Delaney, and the fourth gentleman, which I could not think of his name, I didn't write it down, was a baseball player named Tony G-W-Y-N-N Gwynn. Now, tonight, unfortunately, although there are at least 25 people found this month, there was only time to give you the real McCoy tonight, because I just ran out of time this week. Now, probably all of us have heard the expression, the real McCoy. Mm-hmm. Did you know he was a Black engineer? That's where that name, the real McCoy, came from. His name was Elijah J. McCoy, born in Gloucester, Canada, May 2nd, 1843, and died October 10th, 1929, in a place called Eloise, Michigan. I never heard of Eloise, Michigan, but anyway, that's where he died. Now, the real McCoy expression is a result of Elijah developing the lubricating cup for steam engines, which allowed a continuous flow of oil to the gears so the engine could lubricate itself. He received for his invention 1872. He also received patents for 58 other things he invented, including the automatic sprinkler and the ironing table. And as I said, unfortunately, that's as much as I had time to do today, and I will do better next week because I want all these people to be recognized before the month is over. So thank you so much.
And thank you, Sister Coker. Now, before we let you go, tell me, you know, a few months back we had on our program Dr. Muhammad Ahmed, who is also known as Brother Max Stanford, and he conveyed to us, you know, about his experience with Malcolm X being here in Philadelphia. Do you by any chance recall any of that?
Yes.
Wow. Could you share a little bit of that with us?
Well, you're talking to somebody with a very bad memory. I do recall that he was on the program, but as far as specifically giving accurate information, I really can't help I had to decline because my memory just is not the same for many different reasons.
Okay, no problem. All right, well, if you should think of something, please let us know. Of course, again, for this coming Monday, I believe, there's going to be a bus leaving from here, from Philly, and I believe they're going to also be going over to Camden, New Jersey, to pick up folks from over there as well. They'll be going, of course, to the grave site, you know, Malcolm X's grave site. And,
right.
Of course, and again, we're going to give folks some information about that. We're going to also talk more about Malcolm Latif, for those who do not know. That was the grandson of Malcolm X, Elhaji Miguel Shabazz. We're going to hopefully play a clip for you, one of the last speeches that young Malcolm had given. And I think you're going to find it very interesting because you could tell he was really on the path of continuing his grandfather's legacy. You know, many don't know that. They only know of what they heard about him, you know, some years back, of course, with the fate with the fire. I think he was 12 years old. But anyway, Sister Coco, I want to thank you so much. But before we let you go, I want to ask you, and I know you said your memory is bad, but I'm going to ask anyway because you might remember this. Do you recall a very racist off-white man by the name of George Lincoln Rockwell? Have you ever heard that name?
That doesn't sound familiar.
Okay, great. That's fine. That's okay, because you know what? I had not heard of him either until very recently. And let me tell you, once you hear of this person, or once you hear this person, and we're going to play some of the clips, he was a very well-known man in the early 1960s, and there is a debate that became pretty well-known with this person named George Lincoln Rockwell and Kwame Ture, also known as Stokely Carmichael. And I want to play this clip, and family, I want to warn you all, this is a very candid clip that we're going to play shortly. But I want people to hear how people spoke about black folks in the 1960s on a radio or television program. I want people to literally hear that because we have to really understand a little better when we talk about racism or this idea of what other people were teaching in terms of the theory of white supremacy. We need to hear what that means, because there were people literally out there saying this, and I mean, you know, very candidly. And in this particular case, what makes it so interesting is that this was a person who wasn't like what you would call a redneck cracker. This person was a graduate of went to Brown University, you know, was highly given medals while serving in the Korean War and trained Marines and other kinds of, you know, personnel in the armed forces. So essentially this wasn't just someone who, you know, you could just push off and, you know, just say, oh, he's loony or whatever. No, 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 no. This was a very interesting, articulate kind of person. And, again, we're going to play some clips very soon because we want you all to hear what our people were was going through straight up right in your face during the 1950s and the 1960s. And the point to this is today we have these people that be smiling all in our faces, but when they go home or when they get with each other, they're still George Lincoln Rockwells. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, very clear. Absolutely. All right, my sister, so hang in there, and thank you so much again, and we'll be getting back to you shortly.
Excuse me one second. Hang in anywhere, because black folk don't need to be hanging, all right?
Okay. Just a phrase.
I say that. Black folk don't need to be hanging. That's one of our favorites. But we need to give it some thought.
All righty, my sister. Well, thank you again, and we'll talk to you later.
Okay.
To you. Okay, moving right along. Let's see now. Let's see what we're going to bring you right about now. I think we are going to make an attempt to find one of those clips for you. I think right about now would be a good time to do that. And if any of you have heard of George Lincoln Rockwell, well, please feel free to let us know a little later on, because it's very, very important that we understand, as I said, as I indicated earlier, we need to very much understand, what it is that these people have done, are doing, and more than likely will continue to do in the very near future, to a greater extent, that is, because they're already doing it. Okay, but nevertheless, I think we have found a clip for you, and what we're going to do is try to bring that clip in. So bear with us for a few moments, because we're still having just a little bit of technical difficulty, but I think we're going to be able to find it for you in a few minutes. Please pay close attention to these clips, family, because we're going to be discussing it later. Okay? Hold on. Let's see.
These days, and you have defined it as economic, social, and political power, and not the term of opprobrium which some people cast into the definition. Would you answer it, and what do you think it will eventually amount to?
Well, it will. The concern has been around the black community for quite some time. Prevalent in the writings of Dr. Du Bois, of course, Richard Wright, wrote his book, Black Power, and Mr. Yvonne Bennett. In Ebony magazine, in the last 6 months, been on issues entitled Black Power, so that I couldn't be credited at all.
Well, didn't you, Mr. Carmichael, didn't you really use it to contain considerable extent in the march, recent march down in Mississippi?
Yes, I said.
And hasn't it been construed, whether correctly or not, as indicating almost the antithesis to white power? Great deal of misgivings even in the civil rights movement. I'm thinking of Dr. King, for example, who has some misgivings of its use. Don't you think that it has been misconstrued?
It certainly has been. People have been fighting it, but then that press, they didn't give anybody a chance to define it. It was a new term. I mean, as a newspaper man, assuming that newspaper business is really advertising in this country.
May I ask a question? Mr. Carmichael talks about black power, and I notice the Negro movement is regularly talking about getting at the white power structure, and they make no bones about what they think about the white power structure. Do you mean the same thing by black power as you condemn in the white power structure?
No, I think we need black power to be able to stop the oppression and exploitation that the white power system has.
Well, Mr. Carmichael, surprisingly enough, I came here prepared to argue with you, and the first thing I picked up was a copy of Jet magazine for this week, and I see a quote from you with which I'm forced to agree. So Stokely Carmichael, chairman of SNCC, when asked by TV's Mike Douglas why integration was working, he said, because white people in America don't want it. And I'm hardly agreeing with that sentence. That's exactly what I think is the problem. And in order to get black power, therefore, you are going to have to use force, because I agree with you. The white people don't want integration. That's why they have to pass all these laws. And all the evasion in the world and circumlocution on the word what black power means won't hide the fact that the only way you're going to get what you want is by force.
Well, that depends if black power means integration. I don't see it that. It means that black people can concern the neighborhood in which they live politically, economically, and socially.
Mr. Carmichael, may I ask you a question? Wouldn't you agree that you have alienated a lot of white people in the civil rights movement?
No, I would agree that white people have alienated themselves from the student.
Why have they alienated?
I think it's because of their own racism, because they're afraid of a slogan like black power. You say that we're so powerful that we can alienate them because of a slogan like black power.
But do you want them in your movement? You've been quoted several times as saying, indicating at least that you don't want white persons to take part in your movement.
I don't see where we have said that. I said that
We don't want white people to leave the movement. Certainly, we intend to leave the movement. White people can organize in the black community anymore because it only further perpetuates the theory of white supremacy. That is, the whites are the only ones who are capable of doing anything for black people.
Now, would you agree that a lot of white persons have put their reputation on the line, their lives indeed? Schwerner and Goodman.
I remember that would be the
Father Morris role.
I sure would have been the
These people have been the vanguard of the civil rights movement.
100%.
Now, they must, for some reason, believe that this is not a palatable slogan, if you will.
Are those the people the ones who popped out?
I don't know.
May I say something?
Their contributions, for example, the New York Times, the wire services have quoted these stories that your contributions are way down. Much of your contribution comes from the white community.
May I suggest that the Jewish papers, which I have been reading diligently, one of them I have here, points out that the Jews are being asked to drop civil rights rightly. That's what the Jewish Post and Opinion here. And I suggest to Mr. Carmichael and through the board here, or whatever this may be called, that what's happening is the Jews have been promoting Martin Luther King and his type of mixing, and Malcolm X began a nationalist black movement, which I was forced to agree because they wanted to move out of here. And I think what's happening is the Jews are abandoning Mr. Carmichael and his sort of movement, and they're trying to push Mr. King. And I think Mr. Carmichael represents the black masses, whereas just as Malcolm X did, whereas the Martin Luther King type movement represents the middle-class Negroes.
Mr. Carmichael, if I may interrupt, you may see right here an indication of where Mr. Rockwell is aligning you as the antithesis of his movement, a white supremacy movement.
Well, I think he is.
A white power movement.
I think he is. No question about it.
May I finish? This in itself tends to taint your efforts. There are people who would think in these very terms.
Well, it depends upon who's projecting that. Now, we don't project that as black supremacy. I don't agree with what Mr. Rockwell says. I think that Dr. King does, in fact, represent a great segment within the black community.
Well, you stood at a press conference earlier today, and you said that you are going to align your group, or at least join up with, the black Muslims. Now, they are black nationalists. They're separatists.
They're not called black Muslims. They call themselves Muslims. Second of all, we said that we're going to move in a black community to talk to all black groups, and we're not going to let anybody who's white tell us what groups to talk to or what they represent. We're going to understand firsthand what those groups are saying, and we will see where we can work with those groups together.
Mr. Madigan, I think eventually Mr. Carmichael and I and people like him are going to confront each other shooting, I'm again forced to agree with Mr. Carmichael. I think that black people should lead their own movement. I don't think white people should have anything to do with it. If it is a black movement, it should be led by black men, and I agree with Malcolm X. And if we're going to move in that direction, I would be forced to agree with him, providing we can eventually find some solution short of one of us killing the other.
Why don't you make a statement just fraught with such foreboding as to say eventually we'll be shooting at each other?
It's already happened last week. I know, but
is that an appropriate way to approach a big problem, a basic problem of our time?
It's a historical way, Mr. Madigan.
History is changed by individuals of goodwill.
Mr. Madigan, we took this country away from the Indians. We didn't talk about it. We took it away from them. We killed most of them. There's hardly any left.
Mr. Rucker, what do you believe in?
I believe in my people. I believe in this country and my people.
What people are they?
The white Christian people that built this great country are the ones that I believe in. Mr. Carmichael believes in his black people.
Well, I'm a white Christian.
But you're not with me yet.
Well, I am.
When you try going down to the west side during one of the riots, you'll find yourself in line with me very quickly.
Oh,
can I ask you something? Mr. Daniel Burroughs, who was a member of your movement, is that correct?
That's correct.
Was Jewish.
Right.
He killed himself, if I recall, after it was disclosed in the New York Times that he was indeed Jewish.
That's correct.
Now, one of Mr. Burroughs' stands was to openly promote genocide.
Well, I do not go along with that one bit.
What is your stand on?
My stand is that anybody...
For viewers who don't understand genocide, this means the mass murder of people, of a group of people. This is what was happened.
My answer is this. Anybody who attacks me or this great America that my people helped to build, I'm going to attack them back. This is what, in essence, the Negroes are saying. They are being attacked, and in some cases it's true.
Who is attacking your country?
The Negroes are attacking
our country. How are they your country?
Well, they're attacking my police forces. They're attacking these state troopers and shooting at firemen and policemen. But that doesn't represent my country. I don't know.
Would you say that 26 million Negroes are doing this? Could not some individuals, Negroes, be doing it that are completely separated from people of good intent that are taking the Saudi
racist? The Soviet Union only has something like 10% of the Communist Party, and yet they blow us all up.
Well, they control us. I don't think the parallel is the same at all.
Sir, if you go into the Negro community in some of these real tough Negro areas where I think Mr. Carmichael has looked up to him, or I think Malcolm X was looked up to, as I looked up to him, you will find that they don't distinguish between white liberals and white race mixers or white hate mongers, as they call me. They're after you if you've got a white skin. And I think that this is the inevitable development of what has been going on in our country for all these years. These liberals have been pushing and pushing, and eventually the Negroes have no other reaction than what they're doing.
If that were true, why do you think that is so?
That the Negroes are doing what they're doing? I think the Negroes are doing what they're doing for exactly the same reason that you have a tribal war, or that we took away the country from the Indians. It's a question of one group wants what the other group has. The white man has built this country. The Negroes want it. The white man is not about to share it, as you're finding out everywhere. Every time the Negroes move in, the black man moves in, the white man moves out. Again, as Malcolm X said, the black man is finding this out, and the only solution to his problem is to begin to push harder and harder, because he's never going to get it voluntarily.
Under your proposal, is it that he wants to take over, or is it that he wants the right to be left alone?
With the Negro, I wouldn't vote being left alone. He's shooting firemen and shooting policemen.
Well, the Negro is racist. The Negro is especially across the street from me, 2 bears away. This man doesn't go around shooting his people.
Not yet. Mr.
Rothwell,
all over the country, I went around preaching that we were going to have riots, and so you would hear about black power. People said, oh, you're a hate monger. The Negroes are only full of love, and they want to mix. Now they're shooting policemen, shooting firemen. They want to kill people, and they're doing exactly what I predicted. Now I'm telling you, we're coming to a race war. It's going to be a question of us or the Indians, and this time the Indians are black.
All right, Mr. Rothko, where do you find in our Bill of Rights, where do you find in our Constitution any differentiation among the peoples of this country?
Well, for instance, in the Constitution, Article 1, Section 2, I believe it is, states that black people in the states will be counted as four-fifths of a person.
Have you not heard of the Civil War?
Well, certainly I heard of the Civil War. They run into that from time to time. But the fact remains, the founding fathers of this country put into the Constitution that black people were four-fifths of a person. Or maybe it was three-fifths, and Mr. Carmichael was again agreeing with
three-fifths.
Three-fifths. The founders of this country were racist.
Do you think this country is built on racism?
Of course.
On whose side?
On my side.
Thank you.
Now you're beginning to be a racist on your side, but you won't admit it yet.
Let me
learn black power.
Does that mean racism?
Certainly it means racism.
How does it mean racism?
Because when you have black power, it means the whites in those areas will not have any power. You are distinguishing on the basis of blackness, not on the basis of performance.
Now, how will we exploit it in the communities in which we live?
Mr. Carmichael, I will agree you were exploited. I agree you were brought over here as slaves, which is disgraceful. I agree that you have been exploited for 400 or 300 years or whatever you say. That does not give you the right to shoot at white policemen and white firemen. It does not give you the right to take anything away from me by force. And you won't do it.
Taking anything away from you, Doctor?
I haven't yet. And you'll have a harder time than from some of the whites.
Do you live in the black ghettos?
No, sir, but when I go, if I, well, for instance, like right now, I am planning to walk through Harlem and make a walk through Harlem. And I am told by everybody, this is impossible. White people can't walk on their own streets. In Washington, D.C., the police pick people up after dark who walk on the streets of our nation's capital.
And so you ought to consider why this might have come to pass?
Sure, because the Negroes are going crazy and attacking people.
Did you ever think that it might be due in part to the condition of the Negro through these 200-odd years?
Well, this may be. The Indians have been under the same conditions, but I haven't had any Indian massacres recently.
Do you have any democratic beliefs with a small d?
Depends on what you call Democrat. I'm not going to be any kind of a Democrat like the Democrats who were brought about the situation.
I'm not talking about
Vietnam with the Negroes.
I'm not talking about the political party. I'm saying, for example, how do you justify breaking up meetings that others are holding when you yourself continually want to be heard? How do you justify
it this way? Whenever anybody stands up in this country and preaches treason to my country, as is going on all the time, when they carry Viet Cong flags while our young men in Vietnam are being shot by these people, I consider that treason. I will pull down every communist flag, as I have been doing, that I find and break them up. I think it's treason, and it ought to be prosecuted by our government. If it isn't, I'm going to do the best I can.
But you've broken up civil rights rallies.
Only when we have had communists. We don't break
up. Who is defining this?
Well, the mayor of Chicago has said that there are some in the civil rights movement, Mr. King. There's a lot of people, the police commissioner, and people are saying that there are communists in this movement. And there are.
The mayor of our city said that there were some outside influences. I don't think he ever specified any party at all. Am I right, John?
I'm sure he did not, but even more basic than that, many people, like Christians as you label them, share the distaste, perhaps. Merit aside for the moment, some of the demonstrations relative to Vietnam, I think that's what you object to.
Object to?
But why would you have to, with the name that you call yourself, the American Nazi Party, and the opprobrium that is attached to that word historically, believe that Americans would support you in opposition as their leader in this? It's
because Adolf Hitler said
recently, National Magazine has called you, perhaps, and you saw it because you were featured in it, perhaps the most universally detested public figure in America today.
Yes, and that was Robert Lincoln Rockwell. And, of course, we heard in there also our own Kwame Ture. That was 1966, family. And, well, there's a whole lot more. And it gets even more fiery. But we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to go back to that a little later on. But right about now, we're going to get ready to start going to our live lines. And I definitely want to know what you all think about that, okay? Before we go to your comments, wow. I mean, every time I listen to that tape, it just reminds me of what's really going on. And I mean, that guy, George Rockwell, made it very clear. And you all think that that's not what these people are thinking today? Well, I can guarantee you they are. But at any rate, we're going to talk more about that shortly. And right about now, what we're going to do is go to our live line. And again, we're talking about African Liberation Day. We're talking about the development of Pan-Africanism. Obviously, it's needed. I mean, with what you just heard, that was a live, I'm not sure if it was TV or radio, but it was definitely a major, major broadcast, okay? And again, we're going to go back to that a little later on with another segment of that interview because I think it's important that from a historical perspective, you hear it. And so we're going to share it with you. At any rate, we'll go back to that later. Right now, we're going to go to our live line, and we're going to have our brother David to come in and talk with us about what's coming up next Saturday here in Philadelphia. Of course, African Liberation Day is being observed nationwide, worldwide, actually. So what we're going to do is bring Brother David in, who is a representative of the All African People's Revolutionary Party here in Philadelphia. And, wow, back to part two of that clip. I can't wait to hear y'all comments, too. But at any rate, we're going to go to our live line. And Brother David, do we have you on this line?
Yes, sister, I'm here.
All right. Well, before we go into our dialogue, what, did you hear a little bit of those clips?
Yes, I did. Unreal.
Very interesting, huh?
Yes. I'm more interested in Malcolm X's response to Mr. Rockwell.
Oh, you're going to hear that, too. Very soon.
Good.
We're going to go into that. Very, very interesting. And again, it all ties in because we're talking about black nationalism, we're talking about black power, we're talking about Pan-Africanism. So, you know, we need to let people hear because I'm sure many have never heard. I know I didn't. I, you know, try to do a little studying. But when I ran across that, I was like, oh, we've got to share this one. But anyway,
yes,
we're going to
yes.
go back to that a little later on. Welcome, my brother, to our New Day Resurrection and Liberation for this month.
Thank
this
you,
May
thank
17th.
You, thank, you.
Thank you for joining us. And thank you again for inviting us to participate in the upcoming event that's going to take place next Saturday. Before you tell us
yes.
about that, give us a little history about African Liberation Day.
All right. African Liberation Day was founded in 1958 by Kwame Nkrumah, and for Those of us who don't know who Kwame Nkrumah is, Kwame Nkrumah was the first president of modern-day Ghana. Kwame Nkrumah convened the first conference of the independent states, which was attended by eight other African independent states at the time, in 1958. And this day was created to really mark our onward progress toward liberation on the African continent. Between 1958 and 1963, there were 17 additional African countries that gained their independence from colonialism in Africa. And in 1963, on May 25th, 31 heads of state in Africa met to form the Organization of African Unity, which eventually became the African Union that we have today. And they renamed African Freedom Day, which was its original name, to African Liberation Day. And they changed the date to May 25th. So every year we try to celebrate African Liberation Day as close to that date as possible. So African Liberation Day is a permanent mass institution. It's, as you mentioned earlier, it's celebrated worldwide in the Pan-African movement, and it's really a day that we get together to, it's a day of work. It's not just a day of celebration. It's a day of work in the areas of politically educating our people and organization and reaffirming our commitment to Pan-Africanism and really for freedom and liberation of our people, because it's something that we still don't have. So that's really what the day is about, and it's a day to set our agenda as African people for what we're going to do moving forward for the liberation of our people.
All right. Good thanks. Okay, so tell us a bit about what's happening this coming Saturday.
So this coming Saturday on May 24th, 2014, we're going to be celebrating African Liberation Day at the historic George W. South Memorial Church of the Advocate in Philadelphia. And it's going to be a great program. We're going to have some community workshops so we can dialogue with the community about African issues. And we're talking about issues that we have as a people in general, issues that we have as African women, issues that our youth face. We're going to have some culture, of course. We're going to have some drumming. We're going to have vendors for us. But most importantly, this year at African Liberation Day, we're here to establish an African United Front to coordinate the work that African organizations in Philadelphia need to be doing to work to liberate our people. So we're going to have a lot of organizations come out to build this United Front. We want to get this established at ALD. And then afterwards, we begin to coordinate our work and efforts in Philadelphia to liberate our people.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. So now what time will this get started, and how long will it run?
African Liberation Day will start at noon on Saturday, and we're going to go from noon until 4 p.m.
Okay. And is there an admission fee, or will vendors be coming?
No admission fee. You know, we're not charging people for liberation here. So everyone, it's free. So, you know, bring your whole family, you know, bring all your friends, your colleagues, and there will be vendors there. We are going to have several vendors there selling everything from African soaps, African dresses for our sisters, a lot of things that they're going to have there. We're going to have some books, some propaganda, so... It's a lot that we're going to have.
All right, my brother. Now, where can, if folks want to vend or just want to get more information, how can they reach you, or how can they reach your organization?
All right, if folks want to reach our organization, number one, you should check out our website, which is www.aaprp-intl.org. We have a lot of information on there, just more information about our organization. We have some media pieces on there for people to read. So check out our website. You can check us out on Facebook at AAPRP-DC. You can go on there, and we have a lot of information. And, of course, if you want to contact me, you can contact me at Balanta_Barasa@AAPRP.com.
Okay. Now, before we move on to our next segment, and again, we're going to talk more with Brother David, and we want to talk with you, family, about how do we bring forward the ideas, the work, the concept, et cetera, of Black nationalism and of Pan-Africanism. What can we do today, and how can we do this? I mean, there's always a lot of talk about it, but I think what Brother has just indicated is certainly a major step. You know, during the 1960s and 70s, we heard about something called a Black United Front. They had it here in Philly, they had it in New York, Atlanta, and so forth. You know, so much has happened, but certainly we need something today. So when I heard the brother propose an African United Front, I was like, oh, yeah, I want to know more about that, and I want to, you know, see how we can get involved. So we're going to be there on Saturday. But, you know, again, we want to talk with you all. So, family, if you have a question or a comment for Brother David or in regards to something else that we've done thus far, please push one now, and we certainly will get your question or comment in. We're going to also know what you thought about that clip we played with George Lincoln Rockwell, and we're going to play a little bit more for you because, like I said, it gets deeper, for real. Okay, so... let's see, we do have a couple of callers here. Caller, we're going to go to you at 6029. We're going to open up your mic. And let's see if you have a comment or a question for us tonight. 6029, your mic is open.
Yeah, peace, sister. I'm in the black. How you doing?
I know who that is. Be in the black, too.
You know me, got to be in the black.
No, that's right.
Listen, that clip, you know, I remember listening to it some years back. And in fact, it's one of the clips that motivated me to really want to understand just what is happening to our people in the society. So let me just say, I think, you know, one of the things is that he articulates what a lot of white folks think.
That's right.
In fact, the other conversation where you have to have a serious discourse with white folks, and when you're really talking about some concrete history, that manifestation of hate or bigotry or racism, it comes out.
Mm-hmm.
So yep. We're under no illusions that white folks don't harbor a lot of ill will to our people, because they do. And I'm not talking about the system. I'm just talking about individual white folks. So we got to be very, very cognizant of that, and we have to understand that. But one of the things that probably equally as problematic is that when you think about the value system that many of us in the African community hold, it's problematic. One of the reasons why we have this inability in terms to correctly analyze the situations that come before us is that we have a value system which makes it almost makes it extremely difficult to make the kind of analysis that you need in terms of moving forward. For instance, mm-hmm. this notion that individualism is the way human society is supposed to be organized. Mm-hmm. Now, the irony is that anytime you talk about individualism being, you know, the way to organize a society, then if that's your cue, then you live in a capitalist society, then clearly, then if you're corrupt, greedy, and, you know, from a bout of avarice, then clearly you can justify almost anything as long as you benefit individually. But the issue in terms of collectively, what do you do in terms of really the situation you're confronted with, never becomes an issue at all for people who are individualistic. And so we understand that those people in the African community who are individualistic are very anathema to any type of movement which empowers African people. In that context, we've got to understand very, very clearly that people with that mindset are, in fact, kind of revolutionaries. And at some point in the history, we have to understand clearly who they are. We no longer, at this point in history, We can no longer pretend like we don't understand that these politicians are selling us out. We no longer can pretend that Barack Obama gives a damn about the aspirations or interests of African people. We no longer pretend that it's not a capitalist system which is diametrically opposed to our survival.
Mm-hmm.
So understand that those people operating in the context, you know, of this society, you know, who does things because it may be individually to them, worth it to them, but collectively it does us a real disservice in terms of furthering our oppression in society. So we have to understand the role in terms of counter-revolutionaries that exist, you know, in a society, and in terms, when we formulate a strategy in terms of moving forward, we have to incorporate that. We have to. You know, we're talking about a united front. Even though we're talking about people, you know, people who are supposed to be conscious, we also understand, even in the context of the revolutionary community, there are those who profess to be conscious, but in terms have also internalized these very negative values in terms of what it is to be a human being. So they internalize those values of being American. So we understand that. But anyway, so this issue in terms of values is something that we definitely have to struggle over in terms of we're going to move forward in society.
All right, Brother Haki, as usual, you are always on point, and certainly appreciate you sharing that. And you know, I think here we are, and I oftentimes say this, we're in the 21st century, and I know that, you know, so much has happened, and for some, you know, we've learned. Some of us have learned from, you know, those who have come before us, and we still have a lot to learn, don't get me wrong. But certainly, you know, some of this stuff is duly noted, and I'm definitely looking forward to putting some things in place that need to happen, because we talk about issues, but when we get to the point of developing strategies that we can apply to make these things happen, that I'm not seeing on a national level, I'm not seeing that type of stuff, you know, in our midst. I'm hearing a lot of conversations. But not a lot of strategy as to this is what we're going to do, this is how we're going to do it, this is the timetable for it, and so forth and so on. I was sharing with Brother David earlier that, you know, between now and 2020, the Me Women Movement is responsible for building and developing a school for girls, an independent school for girls. Because, you know, in reality, if we can't even educate our children, how can we even start talking about some liberation of something?
Mm-hmm.
We're not even doing the fundamentals of educating our own children, see? Mm-hmm. So for us, we have to deal with some realities first, you know, simultaneously, but certainly establish some things so people can see that we're serious in this thing on every level. And again, mm-hmm. that's a fundamental level, being able mm-hmm. to have our children to come somewhere where we're giving them the instructions, where we're providing the edification, and so forth and so on. So that's one of the commitments that we've made in terms of our movement to make certain that we set an example, and hopefully, you know, more will come after that. But we have to at least do something to indicate this is what we're saying, this is what we're doing, this is what self-determination is.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, again, that's an objective. And so these are some of the things that we're looking forward to talking with other groups and organizations about as well. You know, the development of institutions or whatever you want to call them, but the things that our people can come to every day or at least, you know, X amount of times a week. Because until we have those types of things, we'll be having these conversations, you know, on and on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
Reality, you see. So these are some of the things that we feel are going to help make a difference and lend to the bigger pictures. But some things have got to be done, you know, again, fundamentally. Brother Haki, I thank you so much, as usual, always providing us with some powerful thought, insight, and analysis. Okay.
In the black.
In the black. Oh, and you know we get ready to break that open, too, in a minute. So I'm going to keep you posted on that because, family, when you hear us say in the black, we're going to tell you more about that because by October we plan to have a catalog available in a place online where you will be able to purchase products produced, manufactured, distributed by black folks. That's part of how we are dealing with our self-determination in terms of developing our financial components, and that is to offer on a national level quality products that are made by and for black people, as well as services, goods and services. So by October, in time for our anniversary, In the Black will be ready, because as we say, you're either in the red or you're in the black. All right, my brother, thank you again. Okay, let's go to caller. You're at 7940. We're going to open up your mic. You have a comment or question for us tonight. 7940. 7940, your mic is open. Okay. All right, we're going to go back to Brother David. Okay, Brother David, yeah. I'm not sure if it's you that has something going on in the background, because we're picking it up through the air.
Not me. I have nothing
going on. Okay, no problem. Okay, great. All right, so now let us do this. Let's go back to, we're going to play part two of that clip. But before we do, let's talk a little bit about what, Brother David, and we welcome you all as well. And we're going to open up the chat room in 5 minutes, so you can also go there. But here's the question. What can we do, or what should we be doing in regards to what we call white supremacy? What are your thoughts about that?
For white supremacy, we need to combat it on every level that we possibly can, because our people are being oppressed on every level that we can possibly think of, whether it's economically, whether it's culturally, socially. We're being oppressed by this system of white supremacy. And the best way to combat any type of oppression that you're facing as a people is to organize. That's the most simple, basic, and effective way to combat white supremacy or any type of oppression is through organization. Because one thing that we have to keep in mind is our enemy is organized. Our enemy is thoroughly organized. So the only way you're going to beat an enemy who is organized is not only to organize, but to out-organize them. And that is the only way that we can combat white supremacy or any type of oppression that our people face is through organization. You cannot think of one so-called leader in our history as a people who was not part of a group or organization, not one. So when we talked earlier about individualism, a lot of us have gotten this Superman or Superwoman mentality where we think we can do everything as individuals. But historically, that has never been true. That has never been the case. Our greatest leaders have always been part of an organization, because you need organization to combat organization.
Right. All right. And I definitely agree. But I want to also add to that, though, that most folks that deal with individuals, for the most part, are usually politicians or other people who kind of, you know, deal in the professional or something like that. Grassroots folks don't usually talk about individualism. You ever notice that?
No. But you can have individuals in your organization who try to be an individual and do everything on their own. And this is, you know, but that's all part of a political education process where we do things as a collective. But you can have some people in organizations even who try to take over things themselves. It's something that shouldn't be done in any grassroots organization, but you have some people who have those type of mentalities and will engage in those type of behaviors.
Right, right. And I think, you know, at this point in time, it's really in our best interest to begin to start defining the difference between what one might call a serious organization and one might call something else. Because, see, you know, there's too much ambiguity with certain things now. And I think, you know, the past, again, has helped us to identify that, you know, when you have an entity that has certain goals, aspirations, concepts, structure, and so forth, usually you're dealing with a different type of operation, you know. But when you kind of, you know, look at some other kinds of things happening, it's more likely to yield, you know, that kind of behavior. But at the same time, within any of the organizations, you find people who want to be in control. That's just, to me, that's an organizational dilemma, period.
Yes.
So that's the hat. You know, you see that happening either way it goes. Competition occurs, jealousy occurs, and other kinds of things. And see, we don't talk about these things for real, but these are the things that have happened, and we know they have happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I've learned is, because like I said, when I started the Million Women March, it was never designed to just be an event. It was always designed to develop and grow into a movement. But because I had not been schooled on some very serious other kinds of dynamics, when certain things happened, it took me for a loop, because I would have never expected my own sister to stab me in the back. I heard about stuff like that, but I had the prep part wasn't really intact the way that it needed to be and could have been, okay? And so when saboteurs were sent in, I expected it, but I never expected it to be certain people. I really didn't. I mean, I was just naive, I guess. But nevertheless, but I'm saying again, so these things happen, and then as a result, you have to end up doing other things just to salvage or to make sure you're able to continue to function, you know, especially when you're infiltrated. So, you know, a lot of different dynamics occur. And, it has to be analyzed, I think, you know, more realistically. But at any rate, family, we want to hear what you all have to say. So let's see. We're going to go to one more caller, and then we're going to go back to our second clip with Mr. Lincoln, George Lincoln Rockwell. You all think y'all heard something in that first clip? You ain't heard nothing yet. But before we do that, we're going to go to caller at 7492. We're going to open up your mic for a comment or a question. Oops, hold on, comment. Hold on, we're getting you. There we go. We got you. 7492, your mic is open.
I'm in the black too, sister. How you doing?
I know that's right. Hey, Brother Lee.
Yeah, how you doing? Hey, your guest. Let me ask your guest for a sucker. Did he say he's an organizer for the AAPIPGC?
No, I'm that is a different group. I'm a member of the APRP, and I'm in the PA chapter.
Oh, okay, cool, no problem. How you doing, brother?
I'm good. How are you, brother?
Good. Well, you know, I just think it's a good thing that African Liberty Day is catching on and expanding, and people begin to become more aware of this great institution. The only thing I just want to say is, I don't have really too much to say. I just wanted to just tell the people that it's important for them to be in the organization, because, you know, organization is the weapon for the oppressed, and if we're not in the organization, more likely than not, we'll be adding confusion even more. We can overcome this confusion through organization, but without it, it will only continue to get crazier and crazier. So I would just like to encourage our people to really serve by our people, join the organization, and you find all the organizations that exist don't represent what you think need to be done, and you have a responsibility to create one yourself and show our people. So on that note, I just want to say that and tell the brothers to keep doing what he's doing, and you'll have a good program. Stay in the black. And stay in the black.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate it.
All right. All right, Brother Lee, well, we thank you for your comments. Brother Lee, did you get a chance to hear any of the first clip we played with George Lincoln Rockwell?
I caught it at the tail end. I didn't hear too much about it. We just got back from African Liberation Day up in D.C., just walking the house. And I caught the last 7 seconds or something. So, you know, yeah.
Oh, hey, well, give us a few minutes. How did things go? Give us a little brief report.
Oh, man, it went excellent. It went really excellent. It was really interesting. Interesting in terms of one of the things that came out of this year, AID, that we've done before, we had it more like in a Brookstein type section. How can I explain? It was different. The dynamics were different. It was different in the sense that, how can you describe it?
The brother alluded to in terms of sending meetings, you know, like this.
Discuss issues like sending a meeting, having people face to face, just outright dialogue, you know. It had mm-hmm. less of the formal academic type of setting, like maybe in the past you may be used to. And we found that to be real responsive to the people.
And one brother talked about the fact, he was upset by the fact that he says that there's so much stuff going on in Washington, D.C., in which people are merely, you know, disregarding. And he was upset about that because he found in essence that AAPRPGC wasn't doing all that it should be doing, because how can you help others if you don't help yourself first? And so the brothers sort of provided some clarity in terms of how that process works, and understanding that the enemy is global. It's not just in Washington, D.C. The enemy is global. And so, exactly. So therefore, in that context, it's important to have relationships throughout the world, because if, in fact, you're going to organize in Washington, D.C. around police brutality or corruption or whatever it is, then the more you can do that internationally, then the more you can discredit the system in terms of bringing forth real revolution. So everybody play a part in terms of bringing down this global beast. And this is the thing we tried to get the brother to understand. I don't think we were too successful. People approached it from different perspectives. But it's a question of political development. I mean, the brother was well-intended, and I understand his frustration, because his position was that, you know, you guys should be focusing more on what's going on here as opposed to what's going on across the seas. But another raised the point, why can't we do two simultaneously? Why can't we deal with what's going on across the seas as well as understand the contradictions right here in America? Why can't we do both? Mm-hmm. Why can't we formulate relationships throughout the world? You see, but I don't think he got the point. I think he was adamant that we should, you know, just only focus with stuff, you know, in particular with Washington, D.C. And so it's one problem peculiar to, you know, lack of political development. So people tend to believe that, in fact, that somehow that you're discounting what's going on in this country, when people, you know, in these formations, these organizations, are very clear what's going on in this country. Mm-hmm. But because it's global, then you simply can't attack it simply from America. You have to attack it all over the world. And this is the important thing. This is the important thing people have to understand. And two, that once you build your organization in terms of doing positive things in the community for your people, then you have a platform about through the world to tell the world what you're doing in terms of trying to bring down global capitalism, in terms of you're going to do a workshop for kids, or you're going to do plays for kids, or whatever you're going to do for kids. Then you have a platform which you can hook up with other organizations and go around the world and tell people, listen, this is what we're doing in terms of combating, you know, global capitalism. So it all fits together. So, but it's a question of political development. A lot of times, you know, a lot of times brothers and sisters don't get it. They assume that you're somehow being liquidationist, that you're not concerned with the issues in the community. Of course the people are. So that was a good discussion. So that was the real highlight in terms of the discussion, because we took a lot of time dealing with the brother in terms of trying to get some clarity, get him to understand that, no, we're not liquidating what's going on in America. We understand what's going on in America. But by the same token, it's a global beast, and we have to attack it globally. We have to have relationships. If there's a situation where we had to get Sister Empress out of the country, then we have relationships, and we can get Sister Empress out of the country. We have to. So we have to have global relationships. We have to have global relationships. And so, it was a struggle. So, you know, Sister's in political development. You know, he's growing. So, you know, and maybe in a year or two, he'll come to the realization, you know, what we're saying to him is that we're not liquidating what's going on in this country. And, in fact, struggle in this country is important. And brothers and sisters who engage in local struggle, no matter on whatever level it is, is always supported. And their achievements are always recognized. So nobody should feel because they're struggling in the context of America that what they do is of no relevance. It's very relevant. Yeah. It's very, very relevant.
And,
but we have to
What I found is because, we've kind of encountered over the years, some similar criticisms. And the way that we found to begin to address that more effectively is to really produce the work. In other words, we show that this is what we do here, you know, and make it very clear that it's an ongoing process of what we do here. Even though we're doing some things in Benin or Ghana or wherever, we still make certain that people understand that our presence here is what it is. And so we deal with the issue of political prisoners, and we're actively involved in that. I mean, actively, you know, visibly involved in that. We, of course, deal with the issue of violence and abuse of our women and girls right here, and we do that consistently. So therefore, you know, it's a little more difficult, at least now, for, you know, for our critics or whomever to say, well, you know, what about the issues here? And all we do is we get them some reference points. Like on May, 17th, 2013 or 2012, this is where we was at, this is what we was doing, And then, it just puts that whole thing to rest.
Yeah, I mean that's fine. If your infrastructure will facilitate that kind of thing, that's all in good. You know what I mean? But in terms of just working internationally, in terms of the kind of things you got to do, it's not as cut and dry. It's a tremendous amount of energy and foresight in terms of trying to do what you have to do. I mean, so sometimes in terms of trying to facilitate everything, you end up doing nothing. So sometimes you have to focus in terms of specifically what you're doing, long-term idea, that this is going to serve so much broader need over a long period of time. So I understand what you're saying. If your structure can facilitate that, we do everything, that's good. That's good. But other structures may not be in a position to facilitate that, and they have to focus on particular things, in terms of, solving this matrix. And so that is
right,
the fundamental
right.
problem. So, the brother in Washington, D.C. was talking about, his whole focus in Southeast Washington, his whole focus was police brutality in Southeast. The brother wasn't particularly concerned about police brutality, outside of Washington, D.C. His focus
right.
was,
okay.
And try to get him to understand that we understand that.
Right.
But, this decision of police brutality is not peculiar only to Washington, brother. It's all over the country.
But
what you're doing is valuable. Yeah, what
no
you're doing
doubt.
Is very valuable. So we're not liquidating what you're doing in terms of its importance. It's very important. You know what I mean? But what you want to do is to use the organization time in terms of dealing specifically with police brutality in Washington D.C. But
right.
there's just so much more internationally that has to be done in terms of legitimizing. Let me tell you something. Here's the problem. As this economy unravels, Sister Empress, the problem is that you and I understand that clearly there are surplus people in the society in which the system finds problematic. It has to find some kind of way to get rid of all these people it no longer has use for. It can't employ people. It can't shelter people. It can't feed people. So as far as capitalism is concerned, this is excess, baggage which has to be remedied on some level. You and I understand that, and see an implicit fear in that is that when locking a large number of people up is not an issue, when stressing people out in terms of facilitating diabetes or heart disease or high blood pressure, when that's not enough, then they have to resort to more vicious kinds of tactics in terms of actually culling or thinning the population out. So this is the fundamental problem we have with. So in understanding that, we have to have international context because, the only thing, we're not in a position to actually go up against these people at this point in terms of being able to sustain ourselves. So it's critical
right.
to have international support around the world to stop in to come in and say, or go to UN or wherever and say, international formations and say, listen, what's going on in America to the African population is criminal, is wrong, blah, 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 blah. So you put pressure on this government to at least minimize any casualties that may be affected upon our people. So
mm-hmm.
so there's a strategy behind it. It's not simply to say, We're going to liquidate our responsibility to the people here in America and somehow focus 10,000 miles across the ocean. It's not like that. That's a much bigger picture, and so that's the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yep. Let me say the
okay.
same thing. We all are, and thank y'all for your patience.
Mm-hmm.
Like we recognize that our struggle is global. It's interconnected. For example, mm-hmm. I'm just going to make a statement. I'd like to get a response from y'all.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what your brother would think if he understood a week ago Al Gore made a statement that we must manage the African facility. Now, what the hell is that all about? Where did that come from? What does that
mm-hmm.
mean? Al Gore making a statement that he's a European in America. He's talking about controlling or managing the African facility. Can you dig that?
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And why would he say this at this particular point in time, given all the stuff that's going on around the world, particularly in Africa? And what does that mean to us? Hey, if you have to manage the African fertility, what do you think he's saying to you as an African living in this country and elsewhere? What do they have in plan for him to come out publicly to say that? What message is he sending to the rest of the world? How would he say that? So anyway, I just want to put it out to your audience. I'd like to get that feedback. What's the significance of reinvest managed African facility?
That's a good point, Brother Lee. All right. And we're going to come back to that.
I'll see you later. All right.
Good things, Brother Lee and Brother Haki. Appreciate that. And we're going to go back to that question that they have been asking. But before we do, Brother David, I'm not sure, but that sound that I'm hearing, I don't know if you have a radio on or a TV, but it's coming through our broadcast.
Yeah, I'm not sure, sister. I have everything turned off. I have nothing on.
Wow, that's interesting. Well, you know, you and I have been having some problems all day.
Yeah, we have. We've been having some technical difficulties.
Yeah, I'm definitely getting the feedback from you because I've muted everyone else out, and you're the only one on now, and I'm getting feedback from you. But, okay, no problem. We're going to continue on. Nevertheless, y'all hear that? We're going to continue on nevertheless.
Yes.
Okay, before we go back to Brother David, we want to kind of bring in, I think, our next clip. So let us do that. Give us a minute here. We want to make sure that you understand what we're talking about when we say these people are vicious. They are, really adamant about their position and what they think of us. And while some of us run around thinking these people are smiling at us and they've reached a point where they now are, going to do the right thing, not. Okay, trust me. If you don't understand that, you will. But here is prime example as to how we know what we know and what we're talking about. So. What we're going to do is go to part two of the clip here. We're trying to open it up, so bear with us. And, wow, I'm still getting that sound. So I'm going to try to see if we can do something about that. Okay, but in the meantime, we're going to go to the second clip here. Okay. Trying to open it.
I can only put that in jail. In fact, we've been thinking of getting Duncan Hines guy to the jails of America, and perhaps Mr. Carmichael will help me on it. But in any case, what I have found out with the Negroes in jails were that the Negro masses, which is what you meet in jail, the poor Negroes, were all for Malcolm X. All the time I was reading the liberal newspaper, but everybody despised Malcolm X, and he was an extremist. Well, I found out the masses of Negroes were for Malcolm X, and I bet the masses are for Mr. Carmichael right now. And I believe that what I'm saying is that the Negro masses and the white masses are coming into a general conflagration while the liberals at the top are saying, all is wrong, we're going to settle it, and you're not going to
settle it. Mr. X, after he left the Muslims, sent a telegram to you.
He did?
What did the telegram say? What did the telegram say?
He told me if I hurt or injured any of the people in Selma, Alabama, where I was going to pose Mr. King down there, that he would come down and shoot.
Did he say to you that he was going to shoot any white people?
Have
you ever found in his philosophy where he said that he was going to go down and start shooting white?
He didn't say that, sir, but I attended his, I spoke at the Muslim rally here in Chicago.
I'm asking you, did he say that?
No, I never heard that.
The Muslim movement and developed a political philosophy. Did he say that he was going out and shoot white people?
I've never heard everything he said. I don't know.
And you answered that you pulled him by sequences and then he was intelligent.
Well, I read about it.
An intelligent white man, you want to vote correctly, don't you?
I try, sir.
Well, then let's see. Because you know, Mr. X said, when he left the Muslim movement, was that his political philosophy was that black people had to organize themselves politically and to move to control their neighborhood.
Well, he said
that
the neighborhood.
I think
he said a little more than neighborhood, as I remember.
No, you told him.
I didn't remember the exact words, but I've read speeches where he said,
I mean, the superior white, he said, certainly remember everything he said.
Well, I don't know whether I'm a superior white, at least I'm white.
Mr. Carmichael, I wonder if I can interrupt a moment. You're talking of controlling
the political structure in neighborhoods. What has your organization done here in Chicago with regard to deposing Congressman Dawson, for example, or certain Negro aldermen who have been accused of being part of the power structure?
The last thing that seems to me that you have to do is to build an organization that was...
Well, wait, you didn't answer my question. What?
That was obviously to begin to organize people politically. That's what the slogan, Black Power, is supposed to give momentum to.
Well, what have you done?
Well, we have been based mainly in the South. It's the first time we've been to move on. But the Negroes do have considerable political power here in Chicago. So you know that, don't you?
No.
Oh, man. I don't have power doesn't mean that. Well, I disagree because I think that they've not been organized politically, and they're wrong. Are you aware of the effort of Negro politicians in Chicago to make sure that illiterate white hoodlums did not take over the policy businesses, that they weren't still conducted by Negroes, that Negroes would benefit by
that
everywhere?
Is that right?
Are you aware of that?
No, I'm not aware of it.
Well, would you please accept it from me as fact, people that were involved in it?
Well, I couldn't accept it as fact.
Right. They didn't actually succeed. But they have efforts also in relation to many businesses in the past that tried to have them in the hands of Negroes. And their record has been made previously, at least in Chicago. Maybe not successfully, but an effort has been made to put the reins of the economy and the reins of political power into the hands of more Negroes than had a position.
And that's what we're trying to do now. Mr. Carmichael, let me ask you something. There's probably many Negroes listening now. Will you, in front of this TV camera here, condemn the rioters out of hand and say that they're wrong and you're justified?
No, I wouldn't condemn them.
That's my point. Now, I think that's
well, let's give a chance to explain. We're talking about rioters in Chicago, Cleveland, and all the country.
Wherever they are.
In the first place, I don't call them rioters. Well, it seems to me that people are rebelling against the condition, against the condition in which they're forced to live. It seems to me that's what they're saying. That if they haven't, if it were a riot, if it was planned or organized, as you said it would be, then it seems to me you'd start getting some strategic people. That hasn't been done. I mean, people who just spontaneously started to rebel against the rioters in fast
today. Would any of that be just hoodlumism?
Well, I just don't like those slogans just thrown out because it's...
Not going to... What I'm interested in, there have been charges made here in Chicago that the rioting on our west side was an organized thing, that it was part of a national pattern. We have had a senator here yesterday, Senator Lausche, who made the remark. Our mayor, Mr. Daley, made a similar remark in a press conference, indicating there was some outside organization to it. Now, I wonder, you are an activist, and you are a part of a very significant organization in the civil rights movement. What is your knowledge of this?
First, because if that were true, then black people would have... We've made more gains than they do after the rebellion.
May I ask you this, Mr. Carmichael? If it was not organized, how do you explain the fact that a few black people, according to what we're told in Watts and in Cleveland and Chicago, were able to overwhelm the entire police forces of these great cities, and you claim it's just an unorganized, spontaneous explosion that whipped the Los Angeles Police Department, the Cleveland the Police Department, they had to call in the National Guard Army to stop them, and you say this was just an unorganized... They overwhelmed them to the point where they had to call in and ask
about
it. The police were unable to stop the violence, to restore order to the street, and had to call in army troops with tanks.
Let's talk about the violence.
Right.
Who was it perpetrated against?
Against white policemen and white firemen. That's where it began. When a policeman tries to arrest a black person right away, they claim that it's a police brutality, and they attack the policeman. They're doing it right now in Chicago.
Are they?
They're doing it all the time. So I have it right here in the newspaper.
If I may, before we read a newspaper or any account of it, we'll stop there very briefly and we'll be right back. So if you said you would get some damn rioting, and then you substituted your word rebellion, started to get bogged down in the semantics of it. Implicit in what you say is that you would not condemn what Negroes did under these conditions of contact because they've been forced into these actions. That's what I had to draw first after what I said. I couldn't condemn or condone. It wasn't my job. People are forced to live in those streets. I don't see it as organized, because I think if you're organized, you don't shoot yourself.
And there were Negroes who were wounded in this...
If you're organized, you shoot the enemy. That's an organized army.
Well, may I point out,
an army doesn't shoot its fellow comrades.
Are you encouraged by the fact that this, in murder in any city that I can determine has a breeding, a race rioting or rebellion as such, and that whites are following Negroes? The balance has been between Negroes and established authority, right or wrong,
policemen.
Would you say that this is true?
If I think that policemen represent authorities and words which are there to keep people inside the barricade.
Wait a minute, Mr. Madigan, you just said something that's not true. In Los Angeles, all white people who entered the area were beaten. And in fact, by men shouting, yes, by men shouting, get right. Here in the Chicago Tribune.
Well, not in Chicago. In Chicago, there's no evidence on it. Is that right,
yes, wait a minute. No, I don't believe there is any evidence. Here we have a headline in the Chicago Tribune for today. Chicago Negro, charged Negro, blue boy in riot. The Negro was shooting at a policeman and shot a little boy.
Well, I think the distinction, not the labor, but the distinction has to be made in a rioting situation. Shots are fired. Rocks are thrown. People walk into shots and walk into rocks. And this doesn't mean it was done with intent. It means it's part of a mob action.
Mr. Schultz, how do you explain the phrase "get righty"? I'd like to know whether Mr. Carmichael approves of this battle cry of "get righty" that they have.
Yes, sir. I'm not sure that battle cry has been publicized by the right publication.
I've heard it.
You have?
Yes, sir. I've heard it.
Well, have you heard it as much as you've heard Black Power?
Well, I've never heard anybody hollering Black Power because it just started, but the get whitey business has been going on quite a while.
You've heard that?
I've been told in New York, that's right, when I was recognized by Negroes, it's exactly where there is rock or get whitey.
Well, they wanted you as an individual.
They want whitey. They beat the eyes out of an old man until they were hanging by the mirrors in Los Angeles, and he was a liberal.
Well, I'm sure that some instance of this occurred, and I'd like to pursue this.
Is there
a member of your organization or any other to implant a hatred against any white men, all white men, in a get righty atmosphere?
I don't have to waste my time organizing people to get righty. When I get to that point, I'm just going to leave. Now, we're just here to organize black people to get white people off their backs, to move the barricades so we can function.
Do you consider that the police are on your backs?
Yes, I think so.
When a policeman arrests a Negro for a bona fide crime, do you think that's getting on your backs? Don't you think Negroes ought to obey the laws, whether they like them or not?
Well, if they have a part of making the laws, yes. Would you obey a law that you didn't have a part to make?
I do it all the time. I have no part of making a law. The IRS just grabbed my place. I had no part of making that law. They did it anyway.
You agree with that?
I don't agree with it, but I didn't riot. I went to the courts and tried to fight it.
If you do not make a law that lets them speak in a certain place, would you agree with it?
If you're saying when I oppose tyranny, yes, indeed, I would. I agree with that.
That's what I'm asking you.
Well, ask it more precisely.
Okay, let's say, would you oppose tyranny? How would you fight tyranny?
I would oppose tyranny with force, the old-fashioned American way. The way our granddaddies did it in the Revolution. They didn't, the Boston Tea Party was pretty rough, and they started fighting and shooting at people.
I mean, you're really a proponent of violence.
What I'm a proponent of is self-defense. And when people offer me violence, nobody's offering me violence. You're not punching anybody.
Why do you have guns? Why does your organization have guns?
Because he's got them. His gang has got them. And they're,
hey, Michael, do you have guns?
You got no guns.
Me?
Does your organization have guns?
Are you training people to use guns? I understand it's true of Mr. Rockwell's organization.
Yeah, no, I don't think you have to train people to punch you. Well, look, here's the answer.
We're not saying.
Do you oppose violence because it's impractical and would not be successful, or because it's morally objectionable? Well, I'm not sure that it can be morally objectionable anymore, because I think that we've tried that for several years. I think that this country is morally bankrupt.
Now, I believe that
Mr. Rockwell is absolutely right, and that people have a right to defend themselves. Everybody, no one would deny that. They're self-preservation first as well. The question is, does one become aggressively violent because one starts from a premise that one is inherently better than somebody else? And you wouldn't start from violence either because someone thought you're inferior, as they do. Take the other side of the question. No, not unless they move first to set up, stop them.
Well, isn't it true if you logically follow this reasoning? That if all other means fail, power, violence itself would be your goal.
Right.
If all other means,
you're not arguing like that. It means that if all other means fail, then Mr. Rockwell is right.
Well, then are we to assume?
No, what I mean by he's right, it means that all white people feel the way he does.
Not all.
The
working class.
And the giant, was that what you consider them a giant?
Yes, sure. Same as I think the same reason I'm here. I mean, I interrupted my, aren't some advocates of black power thinking in terms of violence?
I just screamed them.
Well, let them out of the
screaming.
Yeah, sure. Robert Williams, the ex-head of the NAACP in Monroe, North Carolina, started a rebellion, a revolt with arms, and fled to Cuba, where he is now broadcasting his radio through
big well, that's not good. I can't let you go on the screen. If you're going to be superior, man, then you have to have some knowledge.
Well, I think I'll let the people decide who's superior. I'm simply saying this man is now in Cuba. No, he's in Red China now, as a matter of fact.
No,
but he hasn't. Is he back in Cuba? Well, wherever he is, he puts out direction.
No, no, why would you know you're talking about he got an armed revolution going?
He really said if we had had a...
Why did he leave North Carolina under what circumstances?
He was charged with kidnapping.
Under what circumstances did he...
His statement of the circumstances were, quote, had we started our rebellions in several cities so that the state police would have all been occupied, we could have beat them. He was talking about force, Mr. Carmichael. I have this in writing.
Wow.
He puts out the pamphlets telling Negroes how to make Molotov cocktails, how to tear up cities, and do what he calls guerrilla warfare, urban guerrilla warfare.
Where did you get the pamphlets?
Canada. It's smuggled into Canada, and then it's the United States to America. Negroes, and I'm sure you've seen them.
How did you get it?
We have sources.
Is this where
you're
talking about? No, I don't think so. I don't know who you're talking
about. There's a lot of Negroes, Mr. Manning. You know, all of them.
Okay. Now, is there any, what's your feeling towards that organization or any that advocates? Look, I am not going to accept what the right thing says. Is the philosophy of any black organization.
Exactly. What is the philosophy of Graham?
So, as far as I understand, I haven't even heard of the philosophy of Graham.
Well, I can tell you right now that it was Graham that was going to blow up the Statue of Liberty. It's Graham, the Revolutionary Action Movement. It was Graham.
You're wrong there. But in the time of the Revolutionary Action Movement, that was going to blow up the Statue of Liberty, there were three people who were going to blow up the Statue of Liberty.
Were there actually Graham?
Not that I know of.
Well, I know there were.
You know a lot more than I do. It seems to me that the Revolutionary Action Movement, so-called RAM, has not been an advocate open defiance of the law, as you say.
I have their arguments. They have been arrested already. And in fact, there's somebody who was either here in Cleveland, they were thinking of charging them with treason. However, I know why they're not. Because right here in this paper here, in the Chicago Tribune for the Day, it says that they've caught people along with Dr. King and Jose Williams stealing cars in Atlanta, and the Justice Department says we don't dare arrest these people.
Okay. That was, again, Robert Lincoln Rockwell. You all kind of get a gist of what we're talking about here, and of course that was none other than our own Kwame Ture. That gives you a general idea as to what's really going on. I mean, this was 1966, but I can assure you in 2014 we have all this and then some going on. And so... We're going to go back to our lines, and we're going to just play one more segment for you that's really going to give you some insight into what these people are really about. In case you don't know, and we suspect some of you have not heard these things, well, we're here to help you get acquainted if you're not familiar, and certainly not just get acquainted, but to be more prepared for what is truly yet to come, as you will hear when we go into the third segment. But we have Brother David joining us. He's still with us, and we appreciate him being with us tonight. We've been talking with Brother Lee and Brother Haki also. But there is a program coming up here in Philly on Saturday. The African Liberation Day observance will take place at the Church of the Advocate here starting at 12 o'clock. And we still have Brother David with us. And we're going to open up the phone lines now some more for your comments, questions. If you have something you want to share with what we've talked about so far tonight, if you have a question or comment for Brother David, he's still here with us. And so we're going to go to our line and open up 4381. Your mic is open, 4381.
Oh, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. As usual, I am always learning a lot as I listen to the show, and sometimes I like to share.
Sure.
Excuse me. And I wanted to remind you, you know, when we talk about the white supremacy piece, mm-hmm. that this is the same generation that, if you remember, I read a report that this Judge Dale had talked about, and I've seen it on like C-SPAN or some program like that before, how Nazis lived and were engaged in our, intertwined in our government here. But bottom line is there's this report, and it's called The Raw Story, that account of them. It's a long hidden report. The CIA created a safe haven for Nazis in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And this little report talks about, and it was the report was obtained by the New York Times, and I think it was, oh, it says November the 13th, 2010, and the author of this is Daniel Tenser, T-E-N-C-E-R, and what they're talking about is how the U.S. described the government's pursuit of this one who was called the Angel of Death at the Auschwitz part of, and then another one who was Ivan the Terrible, and they talked about how it was just grueling, this vigilante killing of one of them, but then at the same time, some of them, it says, the report accounts that they were intertwined in the CIA because it was a chain of memos that the officials, they debated about if these people would be of help to them in the Cold War. Now, that's what they say, but we have to remember historically, I believe this came in on the tail end of, well, the beginning of the Ku Klux Klan, and they, you know, the hangings of the black man down south. And so how did they put in these Nazi criminals to start the CIA when the CIA was started, and they intertwined them in there. And so they were organizing not just at that level of what I would call redneck level, but also at that level where they could also terrorize people on another level, those who were in a higher level of authority and the law enforcement. And we all know it's always been intertwined in there. But we have to keep remembering that they were organizing every which way to make sure black folks stayed in their place. And I think that's the critical piece that we have to really understand, that there's organization all around us. And so how do we plan, strategize to be proactive about that? So that's kind of what I was thinking.
Brother David, you have a response?
So you said, how do we plan and organize against the organization that's all around us?
Yeah, all of these deep, entrenched organizations. The man there, what's his name, Rockwell, he's nothing but a puppet of our government to put in and say these things and do these things.
This has been the case for hundreds and hundreds, you know, of years. And the United States government and our oppressors have always been intertwined with other enemies that we have as well. I mean, the Ku Klux Klan has traded in their white sheets for police uniforms and governmental offices and political parties and things of that nature. And the only way we can combat that is through our own organizations. We can't join their organizations. We can't vote for their political parties. We can't rely on them to educate us. We have to be self-determined and create our own everything from our own educational institutions, from our own political parties, and we have to out-organize them, and we have to realize that we will have an inevitable victory. I don't think that we need to have any fear concerning how deeply entrenched they are in other organizations. That I don't think that needs to be a concern for us or a fear that we need to have. Kwame Nkrumah once said that the secret to life is to have no fear. and our enemies have no fear of us. We need not to have any fear of them. We outnumber our oppressors in this world, and all we have to do, as Kwame Ture said, is organize, organize, organize. It's going to be a struggle, but we have no struggle without progress. We may have some losses, but our goal is not to win every battle. Our goal is to win the war.
And so that's, I agree totally what you're saying, and that's my point, is that how do we organize and let those who are willing to organize know how, you know, as I guess some concerted strategic kind of plans or what have you, because, yes, and I do believe that I think these people do a lot of things out of fear of black people because they know of the atrocities that they put on us. So I think they are afraid of us, and that's why this stuff seems to be quite heavy-handed sometimes because they are operating out of fear.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some of us are now afraid of them, and then some of us are not afraid of them.
Mm-hmm.
But it just seems like there is the fear, but I don't know. I just think there's just an overwhelming pivotal point now to make sure we're trying to organize in a comprehensive, strategic way.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, Sister Hattie, I can tell you that I'm going to answer or at least provide some insight into answering your question very shortly. You've heard us talk about it before when we talked about developing and bringing forward the African Women's Army.
Yes.
And so we are preparing to do that. And for October, we will have sort of our first sessions as part of our anniversary. And again, remember that our army is not, you know, like the typical, oh, we're going to, you know, get guns and knives and all of that. No, you can have an army to do many, many things. And we are holistically inclined. We are self-defense oriented, but we are also solution oriented. So our army, you know, has different levels, and we're going to tell folks more about that very, very shortly.
Okay.
So hang right there. Stay right there. I'll say I don't want Sister Cobra to get on me. And I'll definitely give you some insight into that, because that will include also the Million Woman Party. And so that's for self-defense as well as for political action, power. So, you know, we have some things that we're getting ready to bring forward because, as we all agree, it is a question of being organized, organized, organized. So we want to hit it from every angle possible, okay? So thank you, Sister Hattie, and I'm going to respond
thank
to you,
you
more in depth in a few minutes, okay?
Thank you. Thank
all right.
you.
We're going to, you're welcome. Caller, and then we're going to go back to the, I think it's the final segment of Mr. Rockwell, and certainly our own wonderful, I call him Baba Kwame, but of course you know him as Kwame Ture, a.k.a. Sylvie Carmichael. But we're going to go to caller, you're at 9302. We're going to open up your mic for a comment or question. 9302, your mic is open.
All right, greetings, everyone. The young lady that spoke previously about the article in the paper, that was called Operation Paperclip, and it was Russia and America that scrambled for these scientists, and it appeared that Russia beat, you know, got the top scientists, because when they had the embassy over, when the Americans were over in the Russian, you know, over in Russia and the American embassy, the Russians were giving them cancer and making them very ill. And that was Operation Woodpecker. So, you know, this has been going on for many, many years. And it's a eugenics program, genocide. And it's, I see now that they're focusing on black women, African women, in this country and abroad. There is a, they are concentrating on the women. I feel that they feel that, well, we've gotten the young men under control. They have plenty of guns. Mm-hmm. They have plenty of ammunition. So now we're going to go after the women. Because mm-hmm. the men, the other men, they're already in prison. They're mm-hmm. building prisons. The governor has taken money from the schools to build prisons.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, you know, they keep sending us these messages.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, Sister Gloria. And, you know, I was talking to Brother David the other day, actually earlier today, and I mentioned to him that you're right on point. And I had this conversation with someone else, too, this week, and it's this. Here in Philly, roughly 2-3 days ago, 14 young girls were arrested, okay? And this was the second fight, a large fight. My point being that 28 schools have been closed here in Philly, 50 in Chicago. So they are lumping these children up in very close quarters, you know, bringing them in from different parts of the city, creating this conflict kind of stuff. And now we have these young girls literally, you know, duking it out. And they mm-hmm. were arrested this week. And so we've been getting reports for the past couple of years now about young girls who are mm-hmm. fighting. We've been getting reports about some of the schools have these kind of girl gangs where you have to be initiated and beat down to be initiated into the gang. There are several other scenarios that we'll go into a little later at another time in terms of some of the initiation things that girls have to do now to be accepted and to be a part of certain little groups and crews. So, again, I've been putting it out there to our sisters, you know, what are we going to do? Because these are future mothers. Mm-hmm. Right, this is going to be somebody's mother. So mm-hmm. we keep talking about the issue, but we're not talking about what we're going to do. So lastly, and then we're going to get ready to go back to our last clip. Lastly, we now hear this heightened level about male development. And don't get me wrong, I have three sons, so I'm definitely not anti-male. And anyone that knows me know that's just not even nowhere in my psyche. But the fact still remains, with Obama having, what is this thing he got now, Brothers Keepers or some stuff? The bottom line is we're now seeing all over the country this huge insurgence of male mentoring and all this other stuff. And there's now all this funding that's becoming available. We have this thing being pushed with, you know, getting males in school and blah, blah, blah. And see, we saw this coming 2-3 years ago when we were telling people how the Knight Foundation and the Soros Group had created this thing called Black Male Engagement. Mm-hmm. And they were paying people to young black males and older black males. They were offering them money if they had the best stories. And what this was in three major cities, it was black males giving these people their information, their name, their location, their economic status, their educational status, and they would write these stories about their experiences. And the result was they would accumulate all this data in addition to offer the various nonprofits money to be involved in this thing called Black Males Engagement. Okay. So we called it out then and said, there's something really fishy about this, because why are y'all doing this in Philly? And then the other states that you have that you're getting ready to initiate it is Atlanta and Detroit. Two coincidental. But surely enough, and anybody who knows about the Soros people and the Knight Foundation, then you've got to know this, you know, that's already suspect. This is what they do. So the bottom line is we are in serious trouble, not trouble that we can't, you know, resolve, certainly, but we need to fess up and realize that we have some deep stuff right about now. So, Sister Gloria, thank you so much for your comment. And let's see. We're going to go to part four here of this George Lincoln Rockwell piece, and of course, Baba Kwame Ture. And family, now this was going to get a little deep, so I know you're going to have something to say. I'm hoping you're going to have something to say when you hear what this man is getting ready to convey to everyone. And as you can tell, he don't care. I mean, he's straight up and bringing it. So here we go.
Justin Carmichael started talking about black power on the Civil Rights March in Mississippi last month. I was caught completely by surprise. Then I realized that the same thing was happening in New York, as New York Core was happening all over the country. Maybe they weren't calling themselves nationalists, but they were thinking much the same way, end quote. How do you feel about this? This is an indication. By McInnes, who was an avowed black nationalist, that perhaps this is what they mean when they talk about black power. Now, when you have leaders in your movement who make statements like this, this is, despite your disclaimers, this is the thing that the fathers the rest of the community.
Mr. Rockwell says that there are little women to think like this. And he says that the liberal people are pushing people into this position.
Rockwell is absolutely wrong. But while you're saying I'm wrong, you also said I blasphemed by making a statement Jews have been supporting this race mixing movement, and I'm not dropping it. I have a headline here from the Jewish and Methodist. I have the Friday, July 15th, 1966 issue of the National Jewish posted and published by the Jews with a headline here, which I'll be glad to show if it's before I tell you. The headline is Jews asked to drop for the right. There it is right here. Now, how can anybody say that this is not true of blasphemy to say what the Jews themselves said? There certainly must be. I don't know this quotation. I don't know who said it. There must be some people among the Jews. This is the point I'm making.
There is
certainly
Jews. Right.
I'm making the point that there must be people in the white community. There must be Methodists and Catholics and Lutherans and Jews who feel a sense of alienation because of what apparently is a lack of communication between the Negro civil rights leaders and themselves. The black power specter has bothered them, and it's serious enough because some men do to make a statement like this in the newspaper.
Let me ask this, because you're so crossing paths these days. Your evaluation of Martin Luther King, and is the elevation of your position stick and the Kissinger Corps and others an indication that the civil rights movement generally is going to become more militant, engaging some acceptance, but let me use that word. That's what you're asking Dr. Martin Luther King is a militant man. Is he too moderate, fair, or too militant, or just right?
I think he's a militant civil rights.
Would you say he is too leader regards to homicides, keep dialogue,
or anything that he does? And does represent the central theme.
Well, that's the first thing you said, Mr. Carmichael, about your group, which I completely disagree with you. I think the masses of black people are beginning to back away from Dr. King. As shown by the rally here at Soldier School, we wanted 100,000, got 35,000. I think you're going to pick them up because you're preaching Malcolm X's line, which is black nationalism and the people who buy it. This is the white people are buying white nationalism.
What does black nationalism mean to you?
It means the Negro going for self, as the Muslims say, and I think that this is what every man should do, not just the Negro, but every man should go for his own group and pick up for it.
Does that mean anti-brother group?
But the other group is a great fit. Now, you say my group is exploiting, oppressing, and pushing, and don't give me any power, and so forth. If I were you, as I've said many times, had I been born a Negro, I would have been Malcolm X. I've done my best to do so. Dr. King said to me that the use of the term black power causes apprehension among in the community.
When you accepted, I would have to say for the record, sitting just in the seat that you're in, he said it was an unfortunate term, but my recollection is, Bob, that he said that after the explanation to the attached to it by others, he would not disagree.
But he said it was an unwise choice.
Exactly.
But I think we're building up to an inevitable confrontation between black power and white power. No matter what euphemisms you use, there is a man with a horrid black power, as I predicted years ago. Now I predict that this man will be driven, whether he likes it or not. I think he does like it. He will be driven to the point where his own people will push him. Eventually, to the point where he will have to become much more militant
and come out openly with what he means by black power, which is we've done.
Come out openly in the past.
So far, every year we will get more militant. Everybody recognizes this, as I've been preaching. And it's not
understandable.
It's understandable. It's understandable only if the situation was reversed.
What if you're saying?
I told you, I would have been Malcolm X. I wouldn't appreciate what the Negroes have to go through at all. But that doesn't mean I'm going to let the Negroes take away what he got. I'm not about to give this country back to the Indians, the Negroes, or anybody else.
What are you proposing? To round up all Negroes in the United States and
Put
them back to Africa?
I propose the same as Roger Muhammad and Malcolm X used to preach on the way, and that is the repatriation. Our first 5 cents all preached that. I think if we offer real help to Negroes to do just what our programs, if they don't like it here, they won't sit here, our people will never accept them. I think these always can't help them to get their own place. And as I told you, I'd even be willing to give them Miami Beach in Brooklyn if necessary. I'd be willing to go a long way. But I think we're going to have to separate. That's the only answer. Segregation doesn't work, integration doesn't work, and black power won't work. The only thing that's going to work is separation or extermination. One or the other.
Extermination?
Extermination? Somebody can exterminate somebody else because they're going to attack. The black people are going to attack the white people. They're doing it now, and you can use all the euphemisms you want. They are doing it now, and they will continue to get more and more militant. And so finally, you recognize the need for guys like me who will stand up to it and fight it. Let's talk about it.
Well, listen, that's it. See, not as an organization. The amount of people that took part in Chicago was about 1% of the Negro population in
Chicago.
On the west side.
The mass of the Negroes were happy to run in the stores and loot when we got the chance, nevertheless.
So I would have to say that the evidence would not speak. The totality of what you're speaking.
What we have to recognize is that the main thing that stands between the Negro and black power is the police department. And that is what the Negroes are attacking, the police department, specifically so they can get to you.
Oh, they're attacking police department.
Freedom of it. Every time, look at how all these riots start and a policeman tries to do his duty. And policemen, I can tell you right now, I don't know how you have any policemen left. Whenever a policeman tries to do his duty, he's threatened with losing his job and even sometimes going to jail. Here in Chicago, we have two policemen stopped a Negro with a broken bottle attacking people, and a Negro judge turned him loose and condemned the policeman.
That's what happened. The case didn't involve a Negro with a broken bottle.
Two Negroes with broken bottles, but not.
Not just involved a Negro with a broken bottle.
So, why would you say that Chicago was such a scene of considerable action by Sir Martin Luther King and others? Any particular reason why Chicago was put?
Yes, is that the event, certainly, a ghetto area of black people for students that they have to across the country?
But you say it's no different than most of the major cities in the country.
No, I would say it's not.
I'd like to, as we conclude this section as it random, I would like to thank our guests for the news at this time, especially Tom Martin, chairman of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. And I want to thank you very much for coming on the program. Jared Lincoln Rockwell, commander of the American Nazi Party, for being with us in the
country.
Bob Schultz, first assistant to the U.S. Army.
All right, family. Well, you heard it right there. What did he say? Extermination. He made no bones about it. He said it loudly and clearly. Well, Brother David, I want to thank you for joining us tonight. Please give folks that information one more time. And family, we want you all to know we're going to do part two of this program because we want to go into our salute to Malcolm X, Al-Hazmi El-Shabazz, and also to Malcolm Lateef. So we're going to do part two tomorrow, and we're going to continue this dialogue, and we're going to get you all in. We're going to start at 9 o'clock tomorrow night, Eastern Daylight Time. And so we're getting ready to lose our internet stream, but those of you who are on the podcast, you stay right there because we still have you. We're going to let Brother David take us out with his closing comments tonight and also, again, to reiterate for Saturday, upcoming event. Brother David, you got it. Give us that information again.
Yes, thank you, sister. So May 24th. From 12 p.m. to 4 p.m., we're going to have African Liberation Day at the historic Church of the Advocate located on 1801 West Diamond Street in Philadelphia. I want to ask everyone to come out. It's a free event. Bring your family. Bring your friends. And I'll end with this. You know, we give 40 hours a week at least to capitalism. Every single week you give them 40 hours of your blood, your sweat, your tears. You're being exploited. You're being oppressed. So all we're asking you is to come out, spend 4 hours out of your week to do something for your people. Spend 4 hours to come out and talk about your liberation as an African person in America. 4 hours out of your day on Saturday when you spend 40 hours a week giving it to capitalism. So come out to African Liberation Day. Come out to join this African United Front. Come out to fight for the freedom of yourself, your people, your family. So, again, it's going to be on May 24th at the Historic Church of the Advocate from 12 p.m. to 4 p.m., and we look forward to seeing everybody there. And I want to thank you, sister, for inviting me on the show today. We greatly appreciate it.
Oh, it's indeed a pleasure, my brother. And, again, before we close out, I want to make sure you give that website information as well as your telephone number and or email address in case folks want to stay in touch with you. And, family, before Brother David does that, I want to also let you all know that we'll be there on Saturday, and we will be bringing you information about what we're getting ready to bring forward with the African Women's Army, in addition to the Million Women Party, and we have something that's going to be kind of connected to what Brother David is talking about with the African United Front. We're talking about a Black Women's United Front, okay? Because, you see, in this day and time, we have to now look at this thing realistically. We're going to always do things together. But at some point, African women, Black women, have got to differentiate themselves from other women. Because what has happened, a lot of our women have joined other women's groups, organizations, and had this women of color thing going on. And for the most part, you have white women heading it up. And that's because a lot of the Black women who want to do things had nowhere to go, for real, okay, in terms of being proactive. So we've now changed the nature of that game, meaning, sisters, here's something now for you. We are not feminist. We're not anti-male, none of that. It's not about any of that. We represent the mother of civilization. We have no qualms in saying it. The point being, some things need to be addressed by women, and so we are going to do that, okay? So going back to Brother David, again, give us your website address and or email, telephone number, but ways that, you know, folks can connect.
All right, so if you want to get in contact with me or any other member of the All African People's Revolutionary Party, you can check out our website, which is www.aaprp-intl.org, or you can contact us on Facebook at AAPRPDC. And if you would like to reach me, you can contact me at phone number 267-254-1331. And I want to say one more thing, sister, before I get off, because it would be a grave mistake of me if I didn't mention that the All African People's Revolutionary Party does have a women's wing, and that's known as the AAWRU, the All African Women's Revolutionary Union. And as the sister stated, this particular wing of our party is dedicated to women's issues. So the sisters in our party, they're responsible for politically educating the men as well as the sisters in our party on the revolutionary role of women in our African Revolution, because if you analyze history at all, it's been women and youth who have been the spark of any organization, any revolutionary organization you can think of. Our women have had a pivotal role in those organizations. So we have a women's wing as well to address the issues that sisters, African women, specifically face. So I wanted to throw that in there before I get off because, you know, that's very, very important, and it would be a mistake of me if I did not mention that.
Oh, well, brother, and I certainly appreciate that. And we're hoping that, you know, the various women groups that are out there and have been out there will really connect with us, and because we certainly plan to connect with them. Because unfortunately, in these past 16 years, you know, we just haven't gotten the type of response from the various women groups that we had hoped we would. The Million Women March is the largest gathering in the world of any women anywhere ever. And, you know, we had thought with making that historical kind of impact that, you know, that our women nationwide would have saw that as being something that, hey, they should help build. Well, we thought it, but it didn't happen. So, you know, we're now really bringing that issue forward and hoping that our sisters will really connect with us. I mean, again, it's a historical reality that can never be changed. And so people need to, like, you know, deal with it and accept for what it is, because we're not going away. You know, it's unfortunate. But as you know, my brother, and again, we're not afraid to say these things. There are class issues that we've had to deal with. And, you know, and we're like, you know, please. The Men and Women March brought together sisters from all walks of life. For you name it, we had it. So it's just not acceptable any longer to, you know, poo-poo us away or try to dismiss us. It's not going to happen. And we're going to expose folks. You know, if you're talking about being a black woman and you're not connected to the largest group in the world of black women, then excuse me? no, it's not going down like that anymore. The contradictions have got to be dealt with. If there's some issues that you have, bring it. Let's work it out. But, you know, you're not going to just continue to dismiss us. So, you know, we welcome our sisters worldwide, nationwide, you know, throughout the diaspora, because we do have a common enemy. We have not only a common enemy, we got the same mother. See, that's what's real. That's what's, you know, that's not disputable. We have the same mother. So we need to act like we know and deal with that reality. Lastly, before we close out, we do want to remind everyone that Malcolm X Pilgrimage is happening on Monday, May the 19th. Hold on a minute, I got to blow this up so I can really see it. Brother and Cindy did send us the flyer, and I wanted to share that information with all of you. And let's see, it's going to be again this Monday. And let's see, the bus fare is pretty reasonable, $30 for round trip, for the round trip to go to New York if you're in the Philadelphia area or if you're in the Camden, New Jersey area, because that's where the buses are going to be picking folks up at. Here in Philly, you go to Malcolm X Park at 52nd and Larchwood Street here in Philadelphia for the pilgrimage. This is, probably like the 25th year or something like that for this pilgrimage. If you're in the New Jersey area, you're going to go to the 2881 Mount Ephraim Avenue. That's in Camden, New Jersey, near the Pathmark Grocery Lot or Market. That's where the bus will be situated. If you need information or you want to talk to someone, you can email the Africa One Black Nation at gmail.com. Again, that's Africa, the word one spelled out, Africa One Black Nation at gmail.com, or you can call area code 215-796-0366. Again, area code 215-796-0366. That's this Monday. They're going to be visiting both Malcolm X and Betty Shabazz grave site. And I think they're going to be going to a center. Oh, they're going to the center also, the Malcolm X Betty Shabazz Center in New York. Okay, so you have the information. I was trying to find the time that the buses will be leaving. I don't see that here, but I gave you the number, so please feel free to call them. And again, the telephone number is area code 215-796-0366. Okay, we got it. All right, Brother David, I look forward to seeing you on Saturday. Yes. And, hey, family, we appreciate all of you, as usual, for hanging in here with us. This has been a wonderful program again, and we look forward to having you tomorrow night. We're going to be here 9 o'clock for part two. We're going to bring you, again, some selections from Malcolm Lateef, and hopefully we can bring Dr. Randy Short in, but we want to give you some updates on the investigation of the murder, and we want to give you that Marissa Alexander update as well as the Nigerian update. So We've run out of time. We'll be back tomorrow, 9 o'clock. Brother David, same thing,
thank
all
you.
Of you. We're going to leave you as we oftentimes greet you, and that is in the spirit of Ma'at and Hotep. But remember, there can be no real peace, no real Hotep, that is, until there's truly Ma'at, meaning justice. Remember, no justice, no peace. No justice, no peace. Promote the tradition, guys. Together we shall win.